This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A group in Morgantown is taking a stand on the recent immigration policy that is separating children from families. Jillian Brooks has more.
The U.S. Department of Justice announced a zero-tolerance policy in illegal immigration earlier this year. That policy has recently come under scrutiny for news that children are being separated from their parents as they enter the United States across the Mexican border. A group called Mountaineers for Progress hosted a protest Monday evening against the policy. Titled March to Keep Families and Children Safe and Together, community members gathered to march urging representatives to stand up against the policy. In attendance was Reverend Wes Bergen. Bergen came to America from Canada over 20 years ago. He says that this is a race issue, not an immigration issue.
There's 100,000 Canadians living in this country illegally and nobody cares. That's fine because most of us are white.
Although the issue is not happening close to West Virginia, protesters say it is important to stand up to the issue no matter where you are. One candidate who is running for the State House of Delegates, Danielle Walker, says the issue is important to her because she is a mother of two sons. She believes West Virginia is often forgotten about, but that people in our state have the ability to help others.
Mountaineers take care of one another, and that's what we're doing here.
The protesters walked 1 mile, starting at Congressman McKinley's office, then ending in front of Senator Capito's office. There, they stood outside the building and guest speakers spoke about the issue. Democratic nominee, who is running against McKinley in this fall's race for West Virginia 1st Congressional District, Kendra Ferche, says she believes the 100-tolerance immigration policy should be important to everyone.
It doesn't necessarily directly impact us at our West Virginia border, but we're Americans and we should be standing up against these practices.
Organizers of the rally passed out slips of paper with numbers to call if people wanted to take action. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jillian Brooks in Morgantown.
Hazardous chemicals left over from coal-fired power plants are leaching into groundwater across Kentucky. This new look at coal ash pollution comes from the power plants themselves. They were recently required to make public the data from groundwater monitoring. WFPL's Ryan Van Veltzer has the second story in the series, Coal Ash Uncovered.
About a year ago, WFPL News Director Erica Peterson went on a boat trip down the Green River, right by the power plant operated by Big Rivers in Henderson County. And as the boat idled directly below the plant's coal ash landfill, she says at the time, it was pretty clear there was a problem.
Because you look at the bank, and they're right above where the river line was hitting that day. It almost looked like the bank was bleeding. It was kind of rusty orange and sort of a black leaching that was going on from the bank into the river.
Documents show state regulators already suspected there was a problem at Green Station. They've also ID'd issues at Big River's Wilson plant and at Kentucky Utilities' Brown Station, where scientists have found the fish in Harrington Lake have been poisoned by chemicals found in coal ash. But now, for the first time, utilities have had to publish their groundwater monitoring data, and a WFPL and Ohio Valley Resource analysis has found contaminated groundwater at 14 Kentucky power plants. That's every power plant covered under the new federal rules.
So the contamination is ubiquitous.
Abel Russ is an attorney with the nonprofit Environmental Integrity Project.
Almost anywhere you look at a coal plant, you'll find groundwater contamination.
Russ has looked at similar data in states around the country, from Alabama to Maine. Everywhere he's looked, the results have been the same.
Well, I have to say, I think all states are probably equally bad.
At the Mill Creek Generating Station in Louisville, the WFPL and OVR analysis found nearby monitoring wells contained up to more than 40 times more arsenic than national drinking water standards. At Gent Generating Station north of Carrollton, testing discovered radium levels 33 times the drinking water standard. Both arsenic and radium are known to increase the risk of cancer. When we brought our findings to the state, we found out this widespread pollution wasn't really news to regulators.
We are not surprised by your findings.
Energy and Environment Cabinet spokesman John Mura says last month, state regulators met with representatives from six Kentucky utility companies. During that meeting, they told the state they found evidence of problems and would need to do more testing.
Because of this, we asked them to begin meeting with us individually to look over their data and to start formulating a plan to address it.
Mura says as of right now, there's no immediate health risk. For their part, utilities are stressing that data suggesting contamination is only the first round of testing. Under EPA rules, utilities need to conduct a second round of testing to characterize and verify the contamination. The preliminary nature of the data hasn't stopped one utility from reaching out to nearby residents. John McManus with American Electric Power says the company shared their initial results with the community living near Big Sandy Power Plant in eastern Kentucky.
We wanted them to hear from us what the data was starting to show, and particularly as we talked about for some of these parameters that have drinking water standards like arsenic.
Contaminated groundwater doesn't necessarily mean nearby drinking water will be affected, but it could be. As Tom Fitzgerald of the Kentucky Resources Council points out, often these waterways serve dual purposes.
We as a nation have developed an interesting way of utilizing our water resources both as our toilet and our drinking water source.
But in Louisville, LG&E says there's no indication the arsenic-laced groundwater near the Mill Creek Power Plant is affecting the Ohio River, which is a drinking source for millions. Environmental Protection Manager Michael Winkler says the utility has been aware of the groundwater pollution for decades, but doesn't believe it's affecting human health.
Sure. I'm not saying that you guys haven't followed regulations. I'm just simply asking, how long have you known that you've been contaminating the groundwater underneath these sites?
Well, again, Ryan, remember, when these ponds were built in the 1970s, they have a soil bottom, so there's not a liner underneath of it. They were made to contain the solids. So it's always been known that water can diffuse through into the groundwater. So we've had wells that indicate different levels of metals in there. But again, the groundwater flow has always been directly toward the river, and all the river samples have indicated that that's always trace amounts. So we're not impacting any waters in such a way to cause a problem for human health.
Following the second round of testing, every coal ash site that is leaking will have to retrofit or close, according to EPA rules. Louisville Gas and Electric, Duke Energy, American Electric Power, and Tennessee Valley Authority have already committed to closing some of their coal ash waste sites. I'm Ryan Van Velzer in Louisville.
In part three of the series, we'll visit the community living next to the country's largest coal waste site. The Ohio Valley Resources made possible with support from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:52. Scattered rain and thunderstorms today. Some storms could produce heavy rain and gusty wind. Highs in the 80s. There is a flash flood watch in effect beginning at 1 o'clock today through late Friday in areas in central West Virginia. Rain and strong thunderstorms possible tonight with lows in the 60s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. And by the Burrito Bar at Breeze Hill in Lansing, West Virginia, featuring live music every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. More at theburritobarwv.com or on Facebook. Happy Retreat is a historic mansion in Charlestown that was once home of Charles Washington, founder of Charlestown and brother to the nation's first president. Today, the house is becoming a hub for public events, community outreach, and history, and tourism. Liz McCormick reports.
On a hot Saturday afternoon in June, hundreds of locals and out-of-town tourists stop by a historic mansion in Charlestown, West Virginia, known as Happy Retreat. They're here for a day of wine and jazz out on the back lawn. Inside the Happy Retreat mansion, visitors explore the first floor, taking in the historic rooms. This house was built in the 1780s by George Washington's youngest brother, Charles Washington, the founder of Charlestown. It was his home until he died. For more than 200 years, Happy Retreat was a private residence. But then in 2006, the owners at the time were elderly, and the future of the house was unclear. That same year, a group of locals formed a nonprofit group called Friends of Happy Retreat to restore and protect the mansion and boost tourism for the area too. 9 years later, the group purchased the home and began holding events on the property. Friends of Happy Retreat do charge tickets to attend their events and festivals, but everyone involved in putting those events together are volunteers, and all the proceeds go to further restoring the house. Stephanie Summers was born and raised in Charlestown. She says she's glad to see the direction the mansion is taking and was excited to come out for the Wine and Jazz Festival.
By opening places like this up to the public, you're inviting them in, and you're maybe by them coming in, they develop this sense of personal ownership of it. This is a part of my community, and by developing that sense of ownership, you know, they're going to care a lot more about it, and it's going to be so much easier to preserve and maintain these places forever.
Another festival attendee, Evan Clark, is a resident from Winchester, Virginia. He crossed state lines just to attend the event. He says bringing people out to the mansion in this way will help keep the history alive.
Raising awareness by having a wine and jazz festival allows people to become aware of the place and understand the historical importance, and then understand also that it costs a lot of money. So maybe they'll come for a tour, maybe they'll become a donor or a benefactor, and we can preserve that history by exposing more people to it. So I think this is just a wonderful pairing.
Let's go in this other room first.
It's for exactly those reasons Charlestown resident Walter Washington wanted to turn Happy Retreat into what it is today, a historic landmark that draws visitors through community events.
It was important to have a place in town that could really be a place for heritage tourism.
Fun fact about Walter, he's actually a direct descendant of George Washington's other brother, Samuel. Walter's responsible for starting that nonprofit we mentioned, Friends of Happy Retreat, to ensure the mansion's survival.
You know, we have the courthouse, of course, where John Brown was tried, and that's a hugely important historical structure. But this goes back, you know, to the 1780s, and there was no place in Charlestown that really told that story, the story of the early part of town.
Rather than turn the house into a museum, Walter wanted to bring the place to life by incorporating its history into fun events like wine and jazz, book talks, craft beer festivals, and chamber music concerts. Walter says by making this historic spot a vibrant and exciting place to visit, he hopes it will enrich the community and help increase tourism for the entire state.
Jefferson County is really the eastern gateway to West Virginia. I mean, where we have all of the, I don't know how many million people live in the Washington, Baltimore metropolitan areas with all the suburbs of the surrounding counties. And so this is really the gateway to West Virginia for those people. I mean, they come to Harper's Ferry, but that's Harper's Ferry is the very eastern tip of the whole state. And so if we can sort of draw them in this way a little further, then we can tell more stories that way.
There's something special about putting yourself in a historic space while listening to music or a guest speaker at the same time. That's according to the director of the Happy Retreat Wine and Jazz Festival, Fiona Harrison.
I'm from the West Coast. You know, we don't have old buildings like this. We have different sets of history. We have, you know, Mexican explorers and the pueblos and the missions and stuff. But to have an old building like this where former presidents have sat and met, probably had dinner and conducted business, I think the community is missing out if they don't know that sort of thing happened here.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charlestown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.